lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic podcast.
All right, once again, we're joined by fan favourite,
pod favourite,
OG, Christopher Mullen. Thanks for coming on, mate. Really appreciate it once again.
Yeah, thanks, guys. No, it's good. It's good to have a chat to you guys. And I like listening to your stuff during the year as well. But yeah, always good to get on here as well.
Oh, I appreciate you listening to us waffle on about the brand and MotoGP thing.
A bit of pub talk.
Hey, that's all I do these days anyway. Now I just talk about it. So it's easier, right?
It is. You're right, 100%. So how was your year? And it followed, obviously, ASBK and doing a few things personally as well, new house and stuff like that. It's pretty exciting times.
Yeah, things have been going really good. So I live on the Sunshine Coast. If people don't know, I've got two young daughters, so they keep me busy. And, moving house. We've got a few acres where we live, so there's animals, getting the house, new house built. So heaps going on there. But, yeah, following ASBK, so I really enjoy going to the circuits, working with the young riders, the championship, hopefully the future of Australian racing.
Yeah, for sure.
And doing the TV stuff there. So that's pretty cool to be involved. Look, the championship is it's a domestic championship, so it's not to the level of MotoGP or World Superbike, but it's improving and improving all the time. So good to be involved there. And then, did the World Superbike round at Phillip Island, did the MotoGP round at Phillip Island, went to Europe myself this year, been pretty busy.
What do you think of Aussie Superbikes? They're going into more of like a summer. They're changing their calendar up, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're calling it I got told the correct wording. I'm going to get this completely wrong. It's not a summer series. It's going to be a summer calendar, I think, is what trying to refer to it as. But look, I think it's a great thing, right? We've got the climate to be able to run a championship when the rest of the world is on hold. So the last round was at the Bend this year. Really cool racetrack down in South Australia. And we had two-time British Superbike, the current British Superbike. Kyle Ride come out and race super sport. And look, the guy can ride, there's no doubt about it, and he's fast, but he proved that Archie McDonald, Ollie Simpson, Jack Mahaffey, those guys were competitive with him. So it shows the level of our competition. And I think with this summer series, what ASBK are trying to achieve is they can get some of these guys. We can get the Americans. We can get some British guys. We might get Jack Miller at a few rounds and Senna Agius and people like that back here, because Senna's riding at the moment on a Ducati Panigale as well. So we can get a few of those guys involved. I think it only helps the championship and builds it. It's going to be – it's a short season, the start of this year. So they're going to run the 26 season at about five rounds, and that'll finishes about May. And then from October, the 27 season or the first summer series will kick off.
That's exciting. I think that's really smart, as you said, to get riders in from overseas. Like I know Jack's done one ASBK, I think in a Bend a few years ago, and that was huge. So like to have that again and like young Aussie talent competing with Jack Miller, however.
Kyle Ride, he's like, I'd love to do it. Because he goes, like our off-season, we finish in the UK. And he goes, I moved to Spain and I can do some testing. But if I can come out here and race, like, it's exciting. So, there's a few. It's funny, talking to a few of the teams, they're like, we've already been contacted by British riders and American riders.
Yeah, that's great.
What's going to happen? What can we do? Do we have to bring our own bikes? You know, all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a good thing for the championship.
Do you think that secret to success, having big names, is that the missing piece in the ASBK, like, puzzle?
Yeah, look, it always helps, doesn't it? I don't know if it's the biggest missing link. We're a small nation. We have small motorcycle sales in comparison to the rest of the world. And so it's hard for our manufacturers to support our championship as much as they can in, say, the States or in Europe. So I think that holds it back a bit. You know, the financial backing is not there. But if the championship can grow, if it can grow in publicity as well and bring in other sponsors and more TV and bigger names, like you say, I think it's a whole, it's one thing helps the other and it all sort of rolls on. So it's only going to be a good thing, I reckon.
That's exciting. And then hopefully, like, every time I've gone down to ASBK for Phillip Island, it's always cold, wet and raining, so hopefully it fixes that up a little bit.
It's like we complain about the MotoGP, right, in October. You get there in September for ASBK. It's like, oh, my God, what are you going to get? You will get one beautiful day over the 3-day weekend, but you're not going to get 3 days like that.
Tom and I were down there this September and we're sitting on top of the pits, if you remember, was like 8 degrees, raining sideways. The ASBK boys were lining up and Tom's like, how and why the fuck are we doing this?
Oh, I know. I was out there working on TV and one part of the day I've got three jackets on. I was freezing cold. And then you got it all off and you got your shirt, you're just in a T-shirt again, you know, like it's, and then the guys have got to deal with that on the racetrack. Like you said, it's, it's pretty full on. So
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Why don't we go to, we might as well go to Phillip Island in January, you know, it makes sense and that part of the world and make it all work.
In January actually works because you've got heaps of holidays already down there. So it's just one extra like event on at that time.
Exactly.
You know, when you've already got heaps of families and people, we'll go down to the races and have a look.
Well, don't quote me, it's going to be at the island in January. I haven't looked at the dates exactly. It makes sense to be, let's go and use those places that are cold, like, right? And in that time of the year and make the racing exciting. So.
I'm with you. Phillip Island, MotoGP. There's so much talk, obviously, with what's happening with it after 2026. What's your stance on it? What do you think is going to happen? Because everyone's kind of unsure at the moment.
They are, and I don't know any more than anyone else. I know it's a complicated situation. So Dorna have the contract with the Grand Prix Corporation, which is a government-funded organization that runs the Formula One and the MotoGP events in Australia, and they do. Look, the Victorian government do. We love bagging you guys out up in Queensland, I can tell you. But the Victorian government do such a great job for sporting events.
Yeah.
You get all the major events there, right? And the government put in so much money for F1 and MotoGP to build, and they get it in return in the economy. And I hope it can stay because the events have been successful in the past. But Phillip Island, the facilities they haven't been upgraded for a long time. And I can see the playing points. So the Fox family that own the circuit are saying, well, we don't have the contract with the race. You do as the GP Corp. And the GP Corp are saying, well, yeah, but we don't own the track. So we're not going to spend all this money and fix the facilities at the circuit. So there's a bit of a – that's how I understand it. So it's a difficult situation. Let's just hope it keeps going there because the facilities aren't great, right? They don't, the grandstands, the pit garages, the toilet block, all that stuff, the roads getting in and out. It is one of the worst Grand Prix for that, but it is one of the best for racing. And all around the world, all the Europeans love coming to Phillip Island. All the Europeans love watching people that have never been to Phillip Island love watching racing on Phillip Island because they see, you know, those spectacular shots, those images, you know, where you see Bass Strait in the background and the seagulls and the wildlife and everything that's different. So look, it promotes Victoria, it promotes Australia, it promotes Phillip Island circuit around the world. So I hope it can stay there because it does make for such good racing. It's so iconic. But yeah, this is a lot more political than anything else, I reckon.
It's interesting. Like we heard, I agree with everything you're saying, but we heard, and I don't know if this is true at all, that Lindsay Fox wants to build a hotel down there and he can't because of the Bass Coast Shark, the Bass Coast Council, whatever it is. And he's like, well, look, I'll build this hotel. If you let me build this hotel, I'll do your facilities. But that's, and then look, but there's a standoff there.
It very much could be. I've got some commercial properties. I've developed some properties and dealing with councils is, it's like, I don't know if anyone's watched Clarkson's Farm, but it's the same thing. You bang your head against the wall trying to get some sense out of people. So look, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. It's not something I've heard, but look, he's got the finances to be able to do something like that. And maybe that would really help. But it does make you wonder, government agencies sometimes, they just need to tick boxes. And then they're happy. It doesn't matter if it's a good outcome for everyone. So I hope common sense prevails and we get a Grand Prix in the future because, how cool is it?
Yeah. As a rider, Chris, does it really matter about the facilities in the back of pits? Like the riders talk and say, this is junk. We don't want to come back here. Or is it just a byproduct of traveling around the world?
Yeah, it's a byproduct of traveling around the world. All the tracks are different. Look, it's if you've got nice pit boxes and nice rooms to get changed in, that's cool. But honestly, I mean, as long as you get somewhere to get out of the weather, to hide away, to get yourself mentally prepared. As long as the teams can fit everything in the garages, it's all you need, right? Like the action's out on the track, and we have to be careful. We get carried away sometimes, and I've been there and done it. As a rider, you want things to be better and this and that, and but as a look, it'd be nice to have some toilets in the garages so the riders, because before the race, that's when all the riders need to go to the loo, right? And then there's a queue up, and yeah, it makes it a little bit difficult for that, but everything else is it's near here nor there. I think one thing they do need to fix is the width of the pit lane. The flag to flag races in particular, the amount of bikes, how quick everything's happening. That might be a bit of a safety issue, but everything else, I think, from a rider's point of view, it's about being on the circuit.
That's interesting. I never even thought about pit lane, but like I can definitely understand the toilet situation. Like we always laugh, like, I've taken a piss like next to Danny Pedrosa before. Like that shouldn't
I
happen. That should not happen.
know. And he barely made it up to your shoulder, did he?
I was
No,
like, kids' toilets are back there, mate.
that's why he's at the urinal. He couldn't reach the toilet. But yeah, he's it is. It's and it's like that, And you're trying to focus, and that's probably the worst thing. But I mean, if that's the worst thing, like Jesus, we can get up that for the best racetrack. So.
I don't think the GA part of it's really that bad. Like you can build grandstands or whatever, and they can build it to fit, what capacity you're going to have. It's like I think when people talk facilities, they go crazy and think, the outside area. The outside area is great. You can go sit on the grassy patch of turn one and almost touch a rider out in front of you. It's one of the
Yes,
best
I haven't
places to
spent
do it.
any time in the GA area. Like since I've always ridden there or been part of working in television, so I'm pretty much in the paddock. So I can't comment on that. And it's interesting you say that because it is if you've got access to seeing the bikes going and how fast they are, that's what you want, right? So.
Exactly. Like it's I don't think there's any issues there. If anything, it's almost the best, one of the best tracks. And I've heard it from Europeans. Like they go to Mugello, it's amazing. But you're that far
Oh,
back, you've got
you are a long way back. The crowd is a
you got
long way.
massive fences and everything like that.
It's
So
funny though, the Italians bring side cutters, hey, and they just before the race is over, they cut the holes in the fence, and the police just let them go. Yeah, you do half a slowdown lap in Mugello, and they bring you back in because the crowd just make
that's wild.
back. It's wild. Like I was racing there in the Rossi era, so it was like they didn't care who anyone else was. There was one person they were there for, and it was insane. It was yeah, pretty mad. So,
What was it like in the back of the pits in Mugello in the Rossi era? Like, was it manic?
yeah, it's there was a few Grand Prix like Jerez was really noisy, Le Mans, Mugello, Sachsenring. So we'd sleep in we'd motorhome. Most of the riders have motorhomes. You stay at the track, and it's hard to get any sleep because you've got earplugs in, just noise. People have engines on trailers with megaphones, and they just rev them all night long. There's parties going, there's fireworks going off, and they love it. It's a whole festival atmosphere, And they do it really well. They do it really well over there. Like Australia's workplace health and safety would never let any of this stuff happen, right? But it's pretty cool, like what they got up to. As a rider, you sort of get the shit sometimes because you just want, oh, I just want some peace and quiet. I need to get some sleep because I'm working. But those people there are what they're paying for us to go racing, right? Like it's that support. So you understand that as well, and they're having a good time. And yeah, it's pretty cool atmosphere.
Love
That's
that. That's so good. What's your plans for 26, Chris? You got anything in the pipeworks to share with our audience?
So Tommy, anyway, I've been looking at getting a new helmet.
Okay, right you
A
are.
replica helmet.
Okay.
So I'm looking at either like a Marc Marquez, Shoei, Rossi AGV, or controversially like a Nakagami Arai. What do you think?
Well, I think Nakagami Arai might be a bad idea because they'd have to build them strong. Repeat hits throughout the whole weekend. So
That's right.
where
That's
would you
right.
find something like that?
Mate, motoheaven.com.au. They have all the helmet brands that you want. They've got all the racing suits, jackets, big brands, HJC, Shoei, Dainese, Alps. Mate, they have everything. How good's that?
That is so good. And I heard like there's free delivery over $150 as well.
Free delivery over $150. Super, super fast dispatch, which is amazing all around the country. They do an excellent job. You just check out their Google reviews. It's like all five stars. It's pretty amazing. They do a great job.
Give the people the website.
Motoheaven.com.au. Check them out. They are the best in the business for all your motorcycle needs. And they've got a parts finder. You can get all the parts you want. Brake discs, chains, sprockets, spark plugs. I know that's all gobbledygook to you, Tom. But that is the they are the best in the business. Head down to motorheaven.com.au and they will look after you.
No, nothing yet. I haven't even spoken to Motorcycling Australia about doing ASBK. They've been really busy in their off season, so hopefully they plan to keep me. And
you should be on number one on the list, right?
We continue on. I don't know. Who knows? I might be pushed down the list. I always joke. I work with some pretty cool guys there. Steve Martin, an ex-rider as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we wind each other up a lot. So Steve's been there since the beginning, since MA took it over again. So, but yeah, we all work really well, and hopefully the whole crew can be back again. But yeah, I've just gotten back from an adventure ride in New Zealand. I knew you guys wanted to do this pod a week ago, but I was riding bikes.
Yes, that's right. I saw that. Yeah. With Damo Cudlin,
Jamie Stouffer,
yeah.
Glenn Richards, ex British Supersport champion two or three times. Who else was there? Oh, there was a heap of it. There was 8 or 10 of us, and we had a ball. So,
was that like a sponsored event, or you just joined up with some mates? Or
we all joined up with mates. We all
that's mint.
And paid a group, and no advertising. They haven't helped me out or anything, but the group I went with was sensational. They just run a really good adventure tour, 5 days through the South Island, New Zealand, KTM 890s. They're supported by KTM. I've never ridden one of those bikes. I'm a little bit anti-KTM because everyone likes them. I want to ride something that's different and try and beat all the KTMs, but I got on them. They're great bikes. They're prepared well. And these guys just run great tours. The lead rider was quite quick and took us to some quite difficult off-road stuff. So it was cool to be involved. It was cool that they let you explore what you want to do, you know, and they take groups that ride to a very different level than what we did, you know, and they do it really well. And you see some really cool parts of NZ. So it was nice to be over there.
That would have been so cool. Apparently the riding and adventure riding in New Zealand is incredible.
Well, it's like the South Island's got like a million people, right? In the whole island. So, and we're in the remote parts and up on mountains at 1800 meters. And so you're not seeing anyone. You're on these gravel roads and you see the odd farmer and he's Hilux ute rounding his sheep or his cows up, and that's it. You don't see anyone else for 2 or 3 hours, you know, and there's some pretty cool, pretty spectacular views and nice roads we got to go on. So yeah, it's nice.
Did you go, is it like camping and everything like that?
No. We're old.
Five star.
And,
there is some sleep.
Maybe not five. We don't camp under 5 stars, maybe three and a half stars.
Egyptian cotton.
That was about it, but it was all hotels, accommodation sorted, good food. Man, I've never eaten so much in my life. We were stopping everywhere for food. And it's good fun.
Did you able to drag Damo out of the pub every night, or what happened there?
I gotta say, there was Damo did drink his share in beer, definitely, and he finished off everyone's red wine. So he had a good time as well. So we grew up. Damo and I are the same age. We grew up racing dirt track together, and Jamie Stouffer is a couple of years older. He's multiple Australian champion before road racing as well. So us dirt trackers, we were getting on some gravel roads, and the wheels weren't really in line a lot. That was spinning a lot, sideways a lot. Yeah. Even on the bitumen, we were laying black lines everywhere and having a great time. So, yeah, it's cool.
That's funny. Those poor bikes would have just been absolutely abused by like all these ex-motorcycle races after how many days.
Oh, it was great fun. So, to answer your question, Tom, I don't really have any big plans for 26. So yep. I just did that, got back from there, getting ready for Christmas with my daughters and my wife and family, and see what 26 brings. But MotoGP wise, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. You know, first of all, I hope Mark can come back fit. I don't know. I probably shouldn't be concerned and don't read anything into it. I don't know any more than anyone else, but geez, that could be a career ender. We just don't know, you know.
We haven't even thought about that. Like I haven't even put that on the table, but like in the last couple of weeks, it's a lot of people saying that to us. Like, you know, he wasn't at the test. And that was a very important test. And he obviously made the decision early. But, yeah, it's going to be like, I reckon, and I think James and I have chatted about this, it could be the most exciting MotoGP year of all time. Like, we're getting to the end of this regulations, but the bikes, the Aprilia, the Ducati, even Honda, I mean, 10, 12 people can win every Sunday now. So.
Very much so. I'd be interested to see. KTM still seem to be investing money. Acosta started to get some speed.
Yeah.
I mean, Maverick Vinales has brought out Jorge Lorenzo.
how good's that? That is the greatest thing ever.
It's just, look, I know those two guys quite well, and I like them as people, but the way they portray themselves to the media, it's just like, do you have to be European to get it? I don't know. Like, they're easy to take the piss out of, aren't they? But honestly, they are nice guys.
Yeah.
Maverick in particular, so down to earth. But holy smokes, that's
it's like our two biggest things that have really why people also listen to us is because on the weekly basis we're normally bagging out Maverick Vinales or Jorge Lorenzo, and it's like our two memes have teamed up together.
Well, they just teamed up together, and they're just, I mean. It's gold, isn't it? But saying that, Lorenzo's, like, the way he works, it could work for him. I mean, you know, like, but he was fast. Maverick was really quick before he got the injury. He really come to grips with that KTM much more than I thought. I thought, here we go. He's coming off the best bike on the grid to not a very good one, and we're not going to see him again. But he impressed me. So hopefully he comes back fit. But, yeah, Aprilia's got to be. I mean, I hope Jorge Martin can get some speed under his belt. I know a few guys in that garage quite well, and they just want him to get on the bike and get some laps under his belt, because a lot of people believe he will be better than Bez. Mm-hmm. You know, just off pure what he's done in the past in all categories, not taking anything away what Bez has done this year, but you've got to believe a fit, confident Jorge Martin. If a Bezzecchi can challenge for a win, Martin's going to be challenging for the win as well. So, Aprilia in a really good spot. And I mean, Raul Fernandez, since he got the ball, he's impressed me, because I've got to say, I've never rated him, never been a fan, probably because of what him versus Remy Gardner thing. And I really like Remy. And I think he got shafted there quite a lot. But Raul's impressed me with the way he was able to. Not only Phillip Island, but the speed post then was really impressive. Yeah.
So. Really impressive. Going back to Jorge Martin, he's got a lot of pressure on him. So it's his last, next year is his last year, end of contract with Aprilia.
Yep.
And if he's not fast by Mugello, like, you would think Aprilia would be looking for someone like a Fabio Quartararo, because Marco Bezzecchi is their man at the moment. And like, we always say this, like, Jorge Martin, there has to be resentment in that pit garage, because he's tried to get out of the contract. He's tried to go to Honda. That's
the worst thing he did.
Yeah, that's
right. If nothing else, if he had all these injuries and hadn't shown this, like, the speed and results that he's had, if he didn't try and get out of that contract, you'd say, I'm pretty sure going to keep him.
Yeah.
But there's got to be bad blood there.
For sure.
It's just out and out, got to be, you know. So, yeah, I agree. If he's got speed, they'll keep him. But if not, but he's got to be careful. And you're right, James, because, like, what's going to happen? There's going to be more young guys coming in. And if Aprilia don't want him, maybe Honda still won't want him. You know, like, it's going to be interesting. There's not always a position just because you've been a world champion. So.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I think he's the most interesting person to watch, realistically, is Jorge Martin and where he ends up. And, like, he's going to have to hit the ground running from the first round in Thailand. Like, if he's not quick, then, you know, I can see, like, Quartararo wants to, like, I don't think Yamaha's going to do anything. I think you can't turn around that Yamaha in 6 months of an off season or less for a race winning bike, as which he wants. So I already think he's out. He's gone.
I agree. What do you reckon he's going to do on another bike, though? And I think I really rate him. He's good, but he works on that Yamaha. What else has he ever done? Like, he came in with all this hype into Moto3. Never won a race. He won one Moto2 race, and he won that at the right time when Petronas was sort of looking for someone to throw in. It's going to be interesting to see if he could change his style like Mark had to work on a different motorcycle.
Mm. I still think he's most, just as a fan, like the most second most talented rider on that grid. And like I remember when Quartararo came in on that Yamaha, he seemed like he was the only person challenging Mark.
Yeah,
putting
you're
pressure
right.
on him. He was always mentally pretty fragile in a way, but yep. He always had so much speed.
He had so much speed from the very first go.
Yeah.
I agree, but we've only seen him on that. So it will be interesting to see if he can adapt. Because I agree. I think like the results, he's getting more out of that bike than anyone else by far. And it will be. And I think the writing's on the wall too. He's going to be gone from, he's realized he's had his big paychecks.
Yeah.
Right. If he gets paid nothing for the rest of his career, he's set up. Right. So he can go where he wants to get some results now. And where would that be? I'd look at Aprilia.
Yeah, that's what we think.
Well, Aprilia, I mean, amazing.
The interesting thing in 27, like Mark says, no. One knows who's going to have a good bike with a Pirelli tire. Like, Mark's going to get a Honda. That's my theory.
Mark's going to get a Honda?
Yeah.
In what year, sorry?
27.
Wow, back to the motherland. Yes.
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Nah, you know something, Chris. You know something.
He bleeds red and
he does
red and not Ducati red. And that's just the way it's going to be.
Honda are having a real good crack. Like, you know, Nakagami for the first half of the year is testing and running after the 850cc program. And then Alesha's coming in and doing doing it for the second half. So I reckon they're having a real good crack. Anyway, Chris, we've lost you. Are you back? We lost you for a sec.
Back. Yeah.
Hold up.
Alesha Spargaro. Just got back. Can you hear me? Okay, Alesha Spargaro. I wanted to touch on. I never really rated him, but everyone thinks he's a good. He must be a good test rider because look what he did at Aprilia. And now look what he's doing. Like, where's Honda going? That's too much of a coincidence, if you ask me.
Yeah,
good call.
I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think he's done amazing things for Honda and what they're doing. And, like, you know, the speed's already there. Like, Juan Mir's had two podiums. Luca Marini's been up there. Like, they've been consistent top six pace. And like, you know, with that, that's like... It's such a gamble, though. It's Quartararo, going back to him, is in a very tricky position because he just wants the best bike. But how do you know what's the best bike going into these new regulations? But if you're probably going to almost put money on it, it's either, for me, it's either Ducati or Honda, because Honda just throw everything at it. This is their great reset.
That's what I reckon. Honda have got the most resources in human development, in money, in factory size, in bike sales worldwide, right? They can throw the most at it. So that's really why I reckon. And Mark loves Honda, right? He won all that stuff. I really think he's going to go back there. So I reckon this is way too early, but Mark's going to go to Honda with Marini. Mir will be out. I don't know where he will go. Aprilia will move Martin on. Maybe go for Quartararo. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? And will VR46 stay with Ducatis, or will they go to Yamaha because of Valentino's connection?
Yep. There's also rumors of Aprilia.
Yep.
For VR46, and Trackhouse goes to Honda.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
What about Lucio?
I think they would run six Hondas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought Dorna's plan, this is pre-Liberty, was always they ideally wanted each manufacturer to have a factory team and a satellite team.
Yeah.
So four bikes maximum, which is why they supported the Pramac move to Yamaha, you know, to try and try and level it out a bit.
Yeah. So there's a lot of pieces still in the air, I think, with 2027. So
yeah, but it's going to be cool. Like, silly season. And if the past is anything to go off, it's going to start really early.
Yeah, exactly right.
Like, talks are already happening.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. That's why Jorge Martin, like, normally by Mugello,
like,
his contracts are signed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Mark, I think Marquez signed for Factory Ducati at Mugello that round. Was it that round?
Do you remember a couple of years ago when Mark and Alex Marquez were the Repsol Honda riders and Alex hadn't even done one race and he'd already been demoted to the second Honda team for the year two? Yeah. Like it was just like things happen. He'd never even done a MotoGP race, you know, like.
That's insane. That's like just Honda arrogance right there.
They do what they need to do, hey, and get the person they want. So
speaking of Alex though, I mean, what a year. I mean, I just don't. Talk about where's that come from, you know, that wasn't on my bloody Christmas card list last year. That's for sure.
Not at all. And I knew the 23 bike that he was on was pretty average, but I didn't realize the step to the 24 was so big and I didn't realize he was going to get on with it so well. And I mean, it wasn't only that he just got probably the best motorbike in the grid, but he beat everyone else that rode one too, right? So yeah, really impressive season. Really impressive. You can't take anything away from him. And it's I think Alex has had a lot to deal with because he's Mark's younger brother.
Yeah.
You're only there because you your name and everything. No, like he's proven he's a multiple Grand Prix winner. He's won sprints now. He's second in the world championship. He's beaten everyone else on Ducatis apart from arguably one of the greatest ever. So, yeah.
Yeah, we've been like just toying with this all year about obviously, it was such a successful year for Ducati, but like their 24 bike looked faster. So is it really a successful year for Ducati as a manufacturer? But then you've got Mark who absolutely dominated on it. So it's such a weird year for them.
There's a guy, I know, an Italian guy, doesn't work at Ducati, works at another manufacturer. His theory on this, he's been in the paddock a long time. I worked with him years and years ago. And his theory is that Mark knew the 25 bike wasn't better, but he could ride it and Pecco couldn't. So that's why he pushed Ducati to get it. And this guy is, he's in the know. He talks to a lot of people. So look, I'm not 100% certain that's the case, but there's a pretty good chance that that could have happened. And Mark knew that he could just ride around and beat everyone else on the other bike, and then Pecco was beaten, and that was probably going to be his biggest competition if they all ended up on 24 bikes, because he knew what Jorge Martin and Pecco Bagnaia did this season before was pretty special, you know. So they would be hard to beat on the same motorbike. This is what my mate reckons anyway.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's talk about it in the media where they've chosen Mark's direction rather than Pecco's sort of halfway through the season, because Pecco's first half of the season wasn't as bad as what we actually remembered. Like, he actually won Coda, had six podiums. Like, he wasn't terrible. It was the second half of the season because we got such short memories in MotoGP. So you see it as a complete failure of the year.
But how bizarre was it? Like, crash, crash, win Motegi, crash, crash, 15th. I know Motegi's unique and it has a lot more straight up and down braking and you don't trail it in as fast. And look, it is a funny track to get your head around, but it's not that different to all the rest. So, that was very weird that he was so fast there and then nowhere else.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. Like crashing in Misano, where he's done a billion laps around, behind Chantra, who's like 3 days off the pace.
Thank you. I know. You know.
Like it was just so fascinating to watch, and it was almost like watching two races. You'd either watching Mark obliterate the field, and you're like, oh my god, he's amazing. Then you're watching Pecco struggling to get points, and you're just like, what's going on here?
There's a few people that think that Ducati may have actually sabotaged the situation.
Is that an Italian friend who said that?
There's a guy that I spoke to that's a former world champion that thinks that happened.
Really? Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Not Valentino Rossi, is it? No, Lorenzo.
He wanted to be, Oh, man. But I think I just go, wow. Like, do you really think they would do that?
It doesn't make any sense.
It's a two-time champion, you know, like it doesn't make sense to me.
And why is it bad to have Ducati 1-2 then with first and 15th?
Exactly. That's way worse. So just like, But yeah, it's that was the most puzzling thing of the year for me.
Yeah.
But the best surprise was Alex Marquez, like we touched on, and the worst was...
Hey guys, Tom and James here from the Motorsport Republica podcast. We have teamed up with the legends at On Track Experience. They have two premium experience packages for the 2026 MotoGP season. James, tell me what they are.
They do, mate. You can have a guest experience opportunities, including paddock passes and access to Aussie riders. European hospitality with MLAV Racing, with Joel Kelso's team. Access to the back of the paddock, rubbing shoulders of all the MotoGP riders. Garage and service road access. Every MotoGP race on the calendar. Official MotoGP test days, Tom, which is incredible. Full season experience start to finish, and possibility, Tom, of joining us on the podcast. Doesn't get better than that.
Wow. So we're looking for expressions of interest at the moment, guys. We're going to have the link below. Jump on board, single race or for the full season at a massively discounted price. Get involved, join us, and welcome to the 2026 MotoGP season.
We love it.
Thank you.
Pecco Bagnaia, what was going on there that last half the year? I don't know.
Yeah, it was wild. And like Aldeguer for me as well was a big surprise. I mean, I didn't rate him at all, and he just came out. You know, he won Indonesia, didn't he? But just unbelievable for a young kid.
He's really, really good in low grip situations.
Yeah,
he uses his size. Look, he's with probably the best crew chief to work with, Frankie Carchetti. He's got a lot of experience. Worked with Mark last year, and Frankie said he learned so much from Mark last year himself, and he's able to help Furman that way. And he said he's better than Mark in right-hand corners now, and we're learning where Mark does in the lefts, and we're learning what Mark does to put a weekend together. Like when he says we, it's just he's helping Furman do it. And he said the kid's going to be good. He's going to be very, very good. So, and he's got some advantages in his size, he thinks. It's funny talking to Frankie about him, though. He said he's just a kid. He said the first test we went to with him, we're at this restaurant, there's all iPads you order off. We're all trying to work out how to swipe the thing and which button to push. He's ordered his food and playing games on it. You know, he said like it's this new generation coming through. He said they're just young and they just do that stuff. And he goes, you got to remember, he's still just a kid.
You know? Yeah, I know.
You do forget that. And like these are kids riding, you know, MotoGP bikes are so angry.
Yeah,
like it is incredible. So, yeah, you're right. Like Furman's been a massive, not a big surprise for us. Like I thought he would do okay, but I didn't think he was going to win a race. And he was chasing down Mark in Austria.
Yeah,
like, unbelievable. Like amazing on his tires. So yeah, he'll be one to watch next year. How do you, going back to Pecco and Mark, how do you see that situation unfolding next year with those two? Because I think Mark mentally obliterated Pecco.
I 100% agree. 100%. Mark dominated him mentally. And the only way anything will be different if Mark comes back not fit.
Mm.
And then people get a sniff of, oh, we can beat him because, and I'm only guessing. I don't know how bad the injury is. It seems to be kept very quiet. He's in rehab. Everything's going well. I'm just assuming. But I think if Mark comes back 100% fit or very, very close to it, starts testing, I think we're going to see a similar situation, apart from the fact that Marco Bezzecchi will win a couple more races from him.
Yeah, for sure. I think I just read a post, it was only a couple of days ago, from Mark and his doctor, who's surgeon or rehab guy. Mm-hmm. They said he's at 90% plus. So I think it might have even just been Mark that said that. So I personally think he's going to be gone.
I wonder what his 90% is. Wasn't there a broken screw or something? Yeah.
So he's probably going to be fitter.
I got one in my knee. Well, I had one in my knee and it broke and I left it in there for a while and you're like, oh, yeah, get a scan. Oh, don't worry about that. That was already broken, you know, like, and then you go and get it out and you're like, oh, this is way better. But yeah, it's, it's things that you can't believe he was racing around with, you know? Yeah.
In your opinion, Mark Marquez, let me ask you this question. Your Mount Rushmore of MotoGP riders, who is on that? And is Mark Marquez on that?
Of all time?
Yeah.
Yes, Mark's on it. How many have we got on Mount Rushmore?
Four.
Okay. Thank you. I know motorbikes better than politics. Look, and I'm not going to use him, but he won't be one of them. But Ago's there, yeah. but he's pre-Myera. Look, he yeah. won all those world championships, and he's great. But, I mean, he was lapping second place because no one had a bike like his. So it's a bit different. Mick Doohan. Jesus, this is really hard.
It's a good question.
Casey.
And myself.
You really messed me up. You know, and I was going to put Valentino, but the guy I'm going to put instead of Valentino is Wayne Rainey.
Yeah, wow. I like that.
That's my Mount Rushmore. I think Mark, because of what he's done with his comeback, I picked Casey because I think pure talent.
Mm.
No one touches him.
Yeah.
Rainey was the greatest in how he was driven until he broke, like he was unbeaten until he broke back, right? So, and Mick was just to win five in a row on those 500s after the injury he had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just obliterate people on the same motorbike. He was a little bit like Marquez, like the Honda, because of his input, became easier and easier to ride. So he went and rode a harder to ride Honda that was a bit faster, but no one else could ride it just so because no one else could ride it. Like, yeah. I'll just go and ride that because no one else can, you know, and I'll still beat you. So it's just his mentality to absolutely obliterate everyone, you know. So,
looking back on Mick Doohan, like Mick Doohan's era was, you know, I was 5 years old, younger. Like,
yep.
So it's only, like, I only appreciate him later in life, but you can, it seems like he had a lot of C-U-N-T about him when he was racing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was very much mongrel.
Yep.
It's my way or the highway. Like, he had that incident with Cuvier, and, you know, they kind of touch on the last corner of Jerez. He wins the race. Cuvier goes flying. He's on the top of the podium. Like, he had to get, like, almost escorted yeah. out of the racetrack, and he's laughing,
yeah.
like, living it up. It's unbelievable footage.
Well, I didn't know Mick when he raced. I knew a couple of guys that raced against him. I met them after that when our careers passed. And they, like, Taddy O'Carter, for example, who was his teammate, runner-up to him in the World Championship one year. And Taddy said, like, as a rider, number one, no one touched him. As a person, he's like, he was like the bottom, you know. When he said, now he's a great bloke. But when he was racing, like, Mick, you said it, he was just an absolute asshole too. Anyone, but he was there for one job, and it was to win races, and that's yeah. what he paid to do. And the media hated talking to him because if you asked a little bit of a silly question, you just got it rammed back down your throat. That's it, and I'm leaving. And apparently it was pretty brutal. He's completely different now. Like, he's a nice guy. He's easy to talk to, and but he's past his racing days, isn't he? You know,
he looks so intimidating. Like, so he must have been, and, like, you know, being like that in the media must almost intimidate, kind of like what Mark is to a degree. He's not like that, but just must intimidate them on the track.
Yeah, I think that's it. That was Mick's theory. You know, I'll just go out and I'll just be better, and I'll just it just does it, doesn't it? You know, Valentino was very good at it too, with a lot of riders. Because I don't particularly like Rossi, extremely fast, no doubt about it, and he could win rate and talented, but he's not, doesn't have the talent that I saw of a Stoner or a Marquez maybe, but he had the complete package and he could mentally put things together, and he could win races from the back, and he worked hard in the background, and the bike work, you know, it was just the whole package. But I think as well, he just, like, especially like the Gibanau, Biaggi, even his fights with Casey, it was pretty, like, you know, he won them mentally, not from a riding point of view. Yeah.
Talking about the mental game, Tom and I have speak about this all the time, and Bezecchi actually said in one of the races, it might have been Balaton Park, he had someone behind him, Marquez came up behind him, and he saw on his pit board 0.08 mark. And he said his stomach dropped. And it's only someone like Mark that could do that. Do you think that's true in your case, where if you're riding and, you know, you're either leading a race on a podium position, and you had, you know, no shade to Shinya Nakano, but if Shinya Nakano was 0.8 behind you, you knew he was behind you. But then if it was Rossi 0.8 behind you, would your mentality change and be thinking, fuck, I've got this guy behind me now?
No, I didn't. I never thought like that. So the only guy that I could, yeah, you could say Rossi or Stoner when I was like that. But you'd ride a little bit differently, maybe, if there was something coming up, because Casey was never really strong on the brakes. So you didn't need to defend hard on the brakes with Casey, but you needed to defend, you needed to change the way you ride, because he's going to get a run on you out of a corner more than anyone else, right, to put you in a position. So you might change. With Valentino, he's going to be the guy that outbrakes you, and he does it very smart by braking earlier and then let him off. So it was good knowing who was behind you, because you might know how to ride to defend that position a little bit better. But I didn't care who it was. Honestly, did not care. My first ever podium was at Phillip Island, and I was second and Rossi was third, and he was closing in on me because we went with the soft Bridgestone tyre. Well, the Bridgestone was a bit softer than the Michelin.
Yeah.
So went with the open tyre rule, and the track was drying out. So they were closing on me quite quickly, but I didn't care. I didn't care it was Rossi. And then it was Gibbonau behind him. It didn't make any difference to me. You know, it was just, I just need to beat everyone. So it was the same.
We watched that race the other day, didn't we? Was that 06?
That was 06.
Yeah, we watched that race the other day.
Yeah.
Go on.
I should have had a couple more podiums earlier that year, but it's all if buts and maybes, hey? I had pole at Laguna and was leading, and the fuel pump.
Yeah.
It was really hot. The fuel pump was boiling the fuel before, and Nicky won that one.
I remember that.
You know, maybe he still would have beaten me. I can't say for sure, but I had a pretty good lead and I was away. And then in Istanbul, I got pole position as well. And then Olivier Jacques made a hole in the field going down the back straight and knocked me off. And my bike was sitting on top of Pedroza's in the gravel trap. And I picked it up and Melandri won. And I was like, I don't know, 20 odd seconds behind him when I picked my bike up. And I was 18 seconds behind him when the race finished, you know, and I got the fastest lap. So there was a couple of times we had some speed that year, but yeah, all if buts and maybes. So.
Isn't it? It's true. Were you close to any riders when you're in the MotoGP paddock?
Look, in the early days, Kenny Roberts Jr., which is interesting because I took his ride from Suzuki. nearly made him unemployed at one point. We got on quite well. And I got on always well with my teammates. But Casey, we got on well, just being two Aussies, and we grew up together because I've known him since I was about 11 or 12 years old, so racing dirt bikes. But John Hopkins I got on well with, and Laurie Rossi, sort of my two main teammates in the paddock. I guess Colin Edwards, because he came from Superbike, so we knew each other there. And I got on quite well with Nicky, but Nicky was unique. Nicky kept himself to himself a bit, but we got on quite well too. So I guess the English speaking, it's the Americans and the Aussies, right? So yeah.
Even back then, like the paddock was had quite a few Aussies in it and Americans at that stage.
Yeah. Like, I guess we get on with each other because English was our first language. I saw Loris Caporossi again this year because he works in MotoGP Safety Commission, and we got on really well. And his wife Ingrid was there, and she wanted to catch up with my wife Tony. You know, so we all got on quite well in the day. As teammates, but it's just the way it goes, I guess. So,
Would you? I know you got two young girls, but would you travel around MotoGP circuit if you could?
No, basically because of my family. Like, I'd love it if I didn't have a family. If I was a single bloke or just married and no kids and wanted to travel Europe, I've had a few job offers to be inside the paddock in different roles. But yeah, I've knocked them back because I want to live in Oz. I don't want to travel so much anymore. I love the sport, but for me, life's changed now, you know, and I'm here. So, but saying that, yeah, if we lived in Europe, I probably would do it, you know. But it's cool being here, and I hang out in ASBK now. So there you go.
That's fair.
It's just funny, like we as kids, you know, you thought I couldn't think of anything better.
I know.
Traveling to a few races this year, we're like, you know, it'd be good, but like it's
okay.
The media centers, it's a bit of a lonely place, and like, you know, it's interesting how people think that might be the pinnacle, but I don't know. I don't think it is.
No, and look, when I was racing, I loved it. I could not think of anything else. Yeah. It was it's been a great part of my life, and it's what I dreamed of, and I loved every moment of it while I was there. And then when it stopped, it was a little, it took me a little while to get my head around, okay, what am I actually going to do with my life now? This has been my focus since I was about 14, 15, was to try and go fast on a motorbike. And then I was 30 and I was stopped and it's like, oh, what do I do now? But I love every minute. I wouldn't change it, but I wouldn't go back now. There's no way, you know, like what I do now with my life, I really enjoy it.
So. Yeah, we've got Jack Appleyard coming on the pod on Sunday. You know,
okay, cool. I think he's been out in Oz.
He has. He's been coming to the cricket, the poor bastard.
Sorry, he's in Brisbane, so I follow him on Strava, the running app. He actually runs quite well. So there you go.
I'll talk to him about that.
He runs quite fast. I see him on Strava, but he's only a young fella. I used to run that fast when I was young too, but. He was up here, and then he caught up with my sister last week when I was in. He's on the sunny coast, and so I thought he was following the cricket around. There you go.
Just be interesting. I just think, you know, it's a weird, wonderful world traveling the circuit. You know, like there's so many races now, 22, 23 races a year. It's a big effort.
It was hard when I did 18, 19.
Yeah.
That was a killer, but yeah, it's insane now. So World Superbike feels part-time. Once I went MotoGP and back to World Superbike, I was like, whoa, I've got two more weeks off before the next one. You know, it was very different, yeah.
And World Superbike's like, fuck me, that's a European championship now with a wild card in Australia.
Pretty much. It's terrible, isn't it? And this all happened when Dornan bought it. So, and they wanted to keep it a championship second to MotoGP. So when Flamini owned it, they pushed it. And I mean, there were times there probably in the late 90s, early 2000s where Superbike and MotoGP were popularity-wise not so different, right? And very different. There were still two strokes there, four strokes at Superbike. You had some big names in both. Cool series. Mm. From a rider's point of view, you could earn good money in both. Start money, prize money, the countries you went to. But it's changed a lot now.
Oh, definitely. I think it's a shame, to be honest. Like, and I don't understand the philosophy of trying to make something second rate. Why can't they just both be amazing?
Thank you. I don't either. But that's why I don't own a billion-dollar company or whatever it is. It doesn't make sense to me. And even talking to Gregorio Lavia, who I used to race against in World Superbike, he runs that side for Dorna. Like he goes, I find tracks we go to. Where are they? They go to Brazil again next year, aren't they? He said, like he found that for World Superbike, and then it was approved. And then, maybe Grand Prix can go here. And then, thanks. We'll go there. Yeah, they can only run. You know, like so. It's very much a second rate series,
guys. It's like they just exist to make MotoGP look better.
Pretty much.
Crazy. It's wild.
It doesn't make any sense.
How's Top Rack going? Chris?
Well, yeah, this is going to be an interesting one, isn't it? It's just whether he can get his head around those tyres. He's fast, he's got talent. He's running his whole career on Pirellis. 27 is going to be good for him because he's going straight in. It depends what sort of Pirelli they bring and if it's similar to the World Superbike front tyre, but the Michelin front tyre is going to be very different. So, and that's his strength. So let's see how he gets his head around it. So I'm really at a loss there. I like him. Great bloke. I've known him for years since he was coming through like 600 super stocks. And I think he's got a lot of potential. And he's a cool dude. He's pretty relaxed, good with the media, heaps of time for everyone. So I really hope he can do well because it opens the door for more World Superbike riders in the future. But honestly, I don't know. It could go either way or it could be very mediocre. I'm not sure. So.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, I'm pretty bullish on it. If I think about it logically, he's on a V4 Yamaha on Michelin tyres. And if Quartararo can't make that Yamaha work...
Is he going to be able to? Yeah, I'm with you.
That's the issue where people are like, no, he's going to get like top... He's going to challenge Mark. He's going to get podiums. I'm like, he's crazy.
I really... If he challenges Mark in many races next year, I will be very shocked. Same. I'll be pumped for him, but yeah. I'll be... So,
it'd be great for the sport. I'd love to see it. But I personally think Diego Moreira is going to be quicker on that Honda.
Diego Moreira is pretty special, I think.
Yeah.
What he was able to do on that Moto2 bike, he's going to be exciting for the future.
Yeah, isn't he? Yeah, I think he's going to be good. And he's coming onto the Honda at the right time. A great time to be on that bike.
I know, really good time. And he had an offer from Yamaha, didn't he, initially? Yeah. That's what held up Jack's contract. So Yamaha were trying to get him in and he held out for the Honda ride. So, yeah, he's smart as well, not just taking the first opportunity that comes to him. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, thank God Honda's got four riders that are actually quick, because like Chantra was good, obviously, but not that great. And you know, it was only there for Idemitsu, but now there's four proper riders. It's good.
Yeah, it's gonna be really good, isn't it? So yeah, let's see how it goes.
Super exciting.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Chriso, thank you, mate.
Cool. Thanks, guys. No worries. Right. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Hopefully we'll see you during the year sometime.
Yeah, maybe World Supers.
Definitely.
There we go. Yeah. Sounds good.
Some good weather. Do some more pods.
Fingers crossed.
I appreciate it. See you, Chris.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Chris. Bye.